Hey guys, my name is Amy Coonan, and I am a millennial on a mission to eat, clean, cook, dress, and live more sustainably. It's because of that I'm also the host of The Town Hall, Rubicon's first and only podcast where we share sustainability stories from the industry's influencers and the biggest brands. Jam-packed with tips, tricks, and need-to-know info for those that want to do better for the planet but may not know where to start. We are covering it all. Last year, we spoke to some incredible people who are doing some incredible things for our planet. The executive director of the Leonardo DiCaprio Foundation, the CEO of Seven Generation Cleaning Products, and one of the brains behind environmental sustainability in the NBA. This season, we're kicking it up a notch. Don't forget to download and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or iHeartRadio so that you don't miss a minute. And if you can't catch us on your commute or you don't download directly, don't stress. You can check out our website at rubicon.com/townhallpodcast for recaps, reviews, and all things Town Hall. Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Town Hall. Today, I am super excited to be highlighting a fellow B Corp. They have an incredible mission, but I'll let my guests tell you more about all of that. Today, I am joined by Andrew Shackman. He's the president, CEO, and co-founder of LeanPath. LeanPath is a huge player in the fight against food waste. Andrew, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Amy. Happy to be here.
So let's start off really simple, kind of dip our toe in the water. Take me through your professional timeline just a little bit. You know, I hate to make the stupid joke, but like, what did your path to LeanPath look like? What were you doing before?
Right. Well, you know, it's funny. It's fair to say I didn't wake up in third grade and think I'm going to fight food waste for a living. And so how did I get here? And, you know, the quick answer is I started out working in technology and digital media and advertising. And I had the opportunity to work with some food companies and particularly at a sort of business to consumer level, talking to consumers about food brands. And that got me interested in food and the intersection of technology. And then I was looking to figure out the next thing I was going to do after the first dot-com sort of blow up. And I was trying to figure out, you know, where can I make a real difference? And I knew that I wanted something that was going to be meaningful, that was going to solve a real toothache for people, and that was going to be a product, not a service. And there were a series of things I was looking for, but mostly it was about purpose. And I discovered food waste as a problem. And I learned that people were throwing away a lot of food and it was costing them a lot of money. And so when we initially began working on this, it was more as a financial thing. We recognized that people could operate more profitable businesses if they didn't put their money in the garbage. And so that's how we actually began. And then it was actually a journey from there to learn that it was an environmental and social challenge that was of massive scale. And once we learned that, you know, I think the whole world of food waste became, you know, something that was just absolutely critical to be solving.
So do you think there was like a moment or a statistic or an epiphany? Like, what do you think sparked your passion for environmental sustainability as you were working through all of this?
I think it's always been a value of mine. I mean, I've always enjoyed the outdoors and, you know, that's something that, you know, being close to nature is something I always find recharges my batteries. And So I think there was an inherent interest in that. But I think the stat that got me was when I saw what percentage of global greenhouse gas emissions came from wasted food and the process of growing and transporting and ultimately disposing of that wasted food. And, you know, the number moves around a little bit, but 7-8% roughly of GHGs globally, it's breathtaking. And when you realize that, you know, there's no way that we can have climate action without food systems change. And at the heart of food systems, no matter what you do to that system to improve it, if you're wasting a third of the food that you produce, it's just never going to be better. And so we have to deal with food loss and waste as a bedrock principle of food systems change and climate action.
I mean, you lay out the problem so clearly, but, you know, obviously we're here to talk about the solution. So let's talk about LeanPath. How does it work exactly? What are some of the mission critical things that you guys work on when working with restaurants or large scale food production companies? How do you help them reduce their food waste?
Yeah, so I think it's important to recognize that the food waste opportunity is going to be fixed by people, not really by technology. That's our belief is that at the end of the day, we have to engage people in thinking and working in different ways in order to reduce waste. And so while we are a technology company, we approach that work as about being in service of frontline food service teams. And we take the view that the things that we measure, we manage, and the things that we measure, we improve. And yet, historically, no one was measuring wasted food. And as a result, it was the elephant in the kitchen. It was just being dropped into the bin, and people were comfortable with it. They were numb to it. They were working around it and not even seeing it any longer. And our principle was, what if we could implement daily measurement in a way that could wake people up and get them to see this problem in the same way they see it in their homes and the way they value food at home? If we could get them to see that in food service and hospitality, might we then be able to dramatically reduce food waste? And we found that we absolutely could, that once we got people measuring food waste on a daily basis, it changed culture and focused behavior. And the key to that measurement, of course, is tech. You have to have the tech to make the measurement feasible. But once you get the tech in place and the measurements going, this then really becomes about people and culture and making smart choices. People not overproducing, trimming fresh produce and meat carefully, making sure that items don't expire before they get used, really being attentive to portions. There's so many decisions that are made every day by frontline food service teams that influence the amount of waste. And the goal is to get everybody into a mode where they're running a hyper-aware, waste-efficient kitchen.
So let's talk about the tech for a second. You know, LeanPath, like Rubicon, we've wholeheartedly embraced tech solutions to solve these massive global issues. Did you see any resistance when the food industry was welcoming technology, or were they kind of welcoming them with open arms?
Well, I'm smiling, Amy, because I think probably your experience and ours has both been that, you know, change is not always immediately welcomed, right? And so when you begin, you get some interesting feedback, right? And I remember when I used to first start in kitchens, I would walk in and I say, hey, I'm here to help with food waste. And often I'd be met with the chef crossing his or her arms and kind of looking at me like I was a little bit of a threat and telling me, we don't have much food waste here, or we don't have any here. And early on, I was pretty naive and I would say, oh, okay, you know, no problem. Like that's cool. I guess you're one of the folks the lucky folks who doesn't have a problem, and moving on. And of course, I came to realize pretty quickly that this was not really that they didn't have waste. It was that they were worried about looking bad or being criticized, or thought that they weren't, people thinking they weren't doing their job well. And so I think step one was to make it safe and just to say, look, everybody has food waste. The best operators are the ones who are managing it proactively. So that was step one. And then the second step, to your point about technology, and you know, as much as I believe technology enables people, technology is key, right? You've got to have great tech to be able to make this stuff happen in a way that's efficient and easy. And it's got to be just as safe as the topic of food waste, right? If the tech is threatening or complicated, people are going to have a hard time with it. So you've got to make it really easy and intuitive. And one of the most delightful things for me is when we're training someone, oftentimes there'll be someone who's working in a kitchen. Sometimes it's someone who is maybe older and hasn't used tech much, and they're a little bit concerned about this device in the kitchen. And for us, just to be clear, it's a scale and a camera and a touchscreen input device, and we're recording pre-consumer food waste before it goes in the bin. So imagine they bring over a pan of rice before it's going to be thrown away. They set it on this scale, and they have to answer a question or two about why they're throwing it away and what it is. And so the exciting thing is you would teach someone how to do that, and then they'd look at you and they'd say, that's it? And you're like, that's it. And they're like, oh, that's easy. No big deal. And so I think as long as you've got good tech that's designed to be easy and simple and not put a pressure on people to do more than you need, it's great. The other big principle I have is that there has to be a feedback loop where the people who are participating in the process of using the tech and measuring the food waste, that they actually get value from this. And so we immediately give them information when they record food waste about how much they wasted, what it would add up to if that item was wasted every day for the next year, what the environmental impact is of that item in terms of the equivalent number of cars on the road and amount of water that's embedded in that waste. And so the people who record the food waste are the very first people to get the data. And so it's amazing how people's eyes pop open and they go, wow, I didn't realize I'm throwing away just a few dollars of eggs every day, but it adds up to thousands of dollars a year. And so those are the kinds of things that we found, Amy, really to make the tech and the change palatable to everybody. Make it easy, right? Is just make it safe, make it simple, make it valuable for them.
I love what you said about the elephant in the kitchen. And I think, you know, we should talk about the elephant in the episode, right? Like, let's talk about the pandemic. You're serving an industry that was hit harder than most. And, you know, 2020 will always be completely consumed by the pandemic. And a lot of the research and sustainability trends predict that 21, 22, and 23 will all be years that the war on food waste is, you know, hopefully front and center. But before we get into the future, let's talk about what you guys did in the past. How did you guys pivot?
Yeah. Well, first of all, it was a really, really tough time for our customers. And sure, we, you know, have huge empathy for, you know, the fact that many of them were closed entirely. And some of them that weren't closed entirely were operating at dramatically reduced levels. And a lot of people lost their jobs at the front line and or were furloughed, and just a really hard time. And so we came at this and said, how can food waste play a role here that's helpful? And the first thing we realized was that when people were starting to reopen after a cold shutdown, they, you know, they were going to be operating in a completely new context, right? New menus in many cases, very limited, grab and go focused. And that meant that they had no historical data about what people would buy, how much they would buy. And so that's a recipe. When you have uncertainty, that's a recipe for food waste, because you can inadvertently make too much of stuff, you know, something that's unpopular or just too much in general. And so the first thing we recognized was that the key to reopening correctly was to measure food waste as a leading indicator of what was going well and what wasn't. Because if you kept track of your food waste, it was going to give you your quickest view as to what was working and where there were problems and where you needed to quickly adapt. Because I think if there's anything we all learned from COVID, it was, you know, you had to be flexible and willing to adapt immediately. So that was step one. Step two was that, so we started doing training on that. We did webinars. We put out written material, reopening right checklists. We made the point to people that you can't reopen and focus just on sanitation, because, you know, you can't be selectively excellent. Your food has to be good. Yes, things have to be safe and sanitized. You can't be wasting money down the garbage, particularly at a time when you're spending more money on sanitizing and you're spending more money on grab and go containers and supplies, right? So for all these reasons, food waste was critical. Second thing we did after education on that point was we created a product called LeanPath Go, which was specifically designed to measure grab and goes. And we realized that a lot of people weren't going to be using scales to weigh pans of rice in the back of the house. They were going to have full sandwiches and salads and things were already in clamshell containers, and they were going to need to measure those. And so we created that. Then we came out with something called LeanPath Scout, which is actually a lighter weight version of our core product. It does all the same things. It measures and reports, but it's just a little lighter weight and frankly, more affordable. And our goal was to make this available to a broader community at a time when, you know, frankly, volumes were down and budgets were, you know, very, very, very limited. So we came out with a couple of those things. We also came out with a solution called our Impact Suite, which really goes beyond measurement, and it takes your data and computes some recommendations on things you should work on, and then helps guide you through a process of using those items to drive change. So those were all things we came out with. And I guess the last one was we announced our AI tracker, which allows us to automatically classify food waste using machine vision. So those were all things we've released sort of since the onset of COVID. And it's been, you know, I think it's been very much about being flexible and just hearing what our customers are facing. And, you know, we want food waste to be part of food waste prevention, I should be clear, to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. So when their costs are going up in other areas, we want this to help them be a place they can get control and visibility.
I'm listening to you list off all these products and talk about the empathy for your customers. And it seems like, you know, 2020 was tough for everybody, but LeanPath was really able to create some safety nets for their customers. So, you know, another thing that I saw was 2020, in a year that was so tough for so many, LeanPath became B Corp certified. You know, what was that like? And what does LeanPath's B Corp certification mean to you? We talk on the show all the time about being a B Corp. It's, you know, one of our most important and defining factors as a company. And I just kind of wanted to know your feelings about it and what that process was like, especially during the pandemic.
I'm glad you asked about that, Amy, because I know that's something that we definitely have in common in with Rubicon on values around that. And, you know, for us, what was interesting was from the earliest days of the company, we had a triple bottom line mission, right? We were always, well, I won't say the very earliest days, because the very earliest days, as I mentioned, we were focused on helping people save money. And then we learned about the environmental and social element. So once we got there, I would say from that point forward, we had a triple bottom line focus. And it was, you know, one of those things that was just baked into how we approach things. It was, we were focused not just on growing our business, but more importantly, growing our impact. And we were focused on helping customers solve difficult problems, even if they were, you know, not easy problems for us to solve, right? And so those sort of long range views were things that were baked into our thought process. And we also were very focused on our team. We recognized that, you know, in order to be successful at anything related to impact, in my opinion, it all starts first with your team, the employees within the organization. And then from there, if you've got a great team, you will take great care of your customers. And then from there, if you've taken great care of your customers, you'll have great returns for, you know, shareholders and that sort of thing. And so we really focused, those were all kind of values that were really core to us from early on. But what was interesting was we had never actually codified them. In they were things we believed and ways we acted, but the B Corp process allowed us to really formally codify them and take all the things that we were doing and make them crystal clear and institutionalize them so that they are not just, you know, something that we do today. They're something that is embedded in our articles of incorporation and in everything about our business. And for us, that I think is, it's really important that sustainability, right, is not just sustainability, you know, environmentally or socially. It also, you know, there's an element of sustainability related to our business and resilience and making sure that our values persist. So that's why we did it. And then one of the things that was interesting for me about that was that once we did it, people sort of, I think, started to understand us better because we hadn't been, you know, focused on, you know, profit over all else for so long. And, you know, once we became a B Corp, then people kind of understood better what made us tick.
You know, 2021 is certainly happening and things are getting more normal, but my 9-month-old daughter crying in the background just is, it is what it is. You know, we're still all working from home. I don't know if you can hear her, but, you know, I guess that's actually a perfect pivot to my next question. You know, I was going to say that LeanPath obviously spans all of these different industries and food service purveyors, but I did want to switch gears and kind of start now to talk about the individual. You know, you spoke at the beginning of the episode a lot about behaviors, you know, so I want to talk about our own kitchens and the personal impact of rethinking how we see food waste. You know, I'm not going to be able to weigh, maybe someday in the future, to weigh a pan of rice and see things in my own home. But what are some ways that I can begin to reduce food waste? And our listeners, you know, we can kind of bring the LeanPath idea into our own kitchens.
Yeah, I love this question because it's one I'm asked a lot. Could we help people at home? And someday maybe we will. But I think the principles of building awareness in commercial food service also apply in the home. That we have to start by making people aware that we're throwing away a lot of food and it costs us money. And it's, you know, I think people are a little more tuned into it at home than they are at work. It's less of the elephant in the room because people are spending their own money and they're aware of that. But even so, there are behaviors that settle in where, you know, we don't use our leftovers or, you know, we end up buying a bunch of food and then we, you know, whatever, we order takeout or something, right? That ends up leaving those items. And so I think the first thing that's critical at home is you've got to plan your meals as best you can, think ahead, buy off the plan, try not to do impulse purchasing. If you are going to the market and, you know, you don't want to buy things that aren't kind of on the plan because all that stuff ends up causing you to, you know, have things sit and go bad. I love an idea that Dana Gunders from ReFed has in her Waste Free Kitchen Handbook, where she talks about putting a box in the refrigerator that says, you know, eat this first. And you can then every day just cycle things into that box that are potentially going to go bad. So it reminds you to make use of them. And I think, you know, overall, though, it's about, you know, it's planning and buying carefully and then using what you have, and but being closer to food generally. And I think that's been a silver lining of the pandemic, is that many of us had been a bit far away from food. We weren't as connected to preparing it as prior generations. And in the course of the pandemic, we spent a lot of time at home. And of course, everyone's aware of the massive boom in baking, right? The amount of sourdough bread that was produced, and, you know, other
bread was a big one at the beginning.
Yep. And those are great. So you talk about banana bread, or, you know, you end up realizing, right, these are actually dishes that are terrific waste avoidance dishes, right? You take bananas that maybe aren't looking great and you bake with them. That's a terrific use. And so I think we're now getting closer to those things. And as we do, we realize that, you know what, we can use our own creativity and make a difference. And if we put just a little bit of energy into the food we have, we can avoid waste. And I'll give you an example from my life. Yesterday, I went with some friends cherry picking, and were some young folks along, and they picked the lowest cherries that were the least ripe. And it was like, uh-oh, you know, we've got a bunch of not very ripe cherries. Well, made a terrific cherry pie last night with the less ripe cherries. And, you know, those kinds of options are in front of us, right, all the time. So I hope people just at home are, you know, just take a minute, take a pause, and think a bit about your food.
I think the zero waste journey, and I've, you know, said this on the show before, all of these different waste reduction practices are like a diet. You know, all of these small changes will live up to a big result. And, you know, your cherry example was perfect. What kind of other things in your daily routine do you do to ward off waste when you can?
So I will share that I have something that many people don't have, which I use, which is that I happen to live in a dense kind of urban core. And, you know, as much as there is an urban core in Portland, but it's a sort of dense part of Portland where I have a supermarket one block away. And that's a luxury that most people just don't have. But I have used that pretty carefully so that I try not to buy more than what I need for a day at a time. And I know that's a very kind of European approach to you know, going to the market very regularly. And I think that speaks to the need for, you know, food access broadly. You know, what I'm able to do is just not something that the average person can do, that they're not within a block of a supermarket. But that's been honestly the biggest thing for me, is just not be putting myself in a position where I have things that are potentially going to not get used. And I can be pretty flexible and adaptable. But I think overall, right, like what we have to do as a community is we just have to recognize that food is precious. And even though it may not be, you know, as big a percentage of our wallet here in the U.S., you know, percentage of our income doesn't going to buy food as it is in many parts of the world, it remains absolutely precious, and we have to be careful with it.
Andrew, before I let you get back to your Monday morning, because, you know, the time difference, and I'm going to ask you 10 quick questions, and you just fire off the first thing that comes to your mind. You ready?
Okay.
Okay. So speaking of Monday morning, question one, what does your morning routine look like?
Coffee.
Two, what was the last show or series or something like that that you binge watched?
WandaVision, because my brother directed it.
Who is the last person that you texted?
My partner. The end.
If you had a talk show, who would your first guest be?
Orson Welles, if he were alive.
What is one song you could listen to over and over again and not get sick of it?
Oh, goodness. That's a tough one for me. All right, let me come back to that one.
Deal. What is one thing on your bucket list?
Going to Africa, which I have not done yet.
What is the best piece of advice that you've ever been given, personal or professional?
Oh, so much great advice. I mean, I think probably the biggest one is just take risks and, you know, follow your dreams. I know it's cliche, but don't let the sort of practicality of something stop you from pursuing something that really matters.
Where's a dream vacation spot for you?
Hawaii.
When you were little, and we kind of talked about this at the beginning as a joke, what did you want to be when you grew up?
So when I was little, I wanted to be a film director. That was my initial sort of plan. And I always loved telling stories. And so to this point, I still tell stories, right? It's just, it's about food waste mostly.
Back to your song, one song you can listen to over and over again.
All right. I'm going to go with You Get What You Give from the New Radicals, which is an old one, but it's so positive.
And lastly, what does success mean to you?
Impact.
Andrew, we are so lucky to have industry influencers like you fighting the good fight against food waste and taking some time out of your day to talk to us about it. This conversation was really inspiring. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you, Amy. I appreciate it.